everyone. The Bible reading tonight is from Judges chapter 14, verses 8 and 9. So Judges chapter 14, verses 8 and 9. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass, and in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they ate too. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass.
Good evening, everyone. Good to see you. You probably think, like, that Bible reading, we're obviously talking about dating, right? Oh, thank you. It will make sense by the end, trust me. But I just wanted to say, like, week three of our Love, Sex, Marriage series, and I've just been hearing such great things about the small groups, the life groups, which have been happening, the way that you guys are engaging and talking, and actually, like, genuinely thinking about this stuff and wanting to, really be obedient to what Christ is calling us into. And so, well done actually being up for that wrestle. Well done for actually being vulnerable and open. And I've been hearing a lot of you being like, I'm looking forward to tonight's talk a lot. And so I feel like dating and where we're at there is actually like, it's a really topical thing for us. It's really real in our lives. But I love that you guys actually come at it with this attitude of like, how do I do this well? Like, how do I do this purposefully? And how do I do this in a loving, godly way? So I'm really excited for tonight. And if you haven't listened to the other two talks, definitely go back and do it. Make sure you put time in your week to go listen to Andrew's one on marriage and sexual immorality and culture last week. Because this week we're looking at dating, and a lot of what we're talking about comes from those talks as well. We're going to be looking at what does the Bible have to teach us when it comes to dating? What is the good design actually behind it? And how do we live into that ideal as followers of Jesus? Here's where we're going tonight so that we know. We're going to start with the idol of relationships. And then we're going to look at the impact that that actually has on the way that we view singleness. And singleness in church, but also culture as well. Then we'll get more practical as we look at like pre-dating, before we are in a relationship. And then actually like we are dating, you're in a relationship. How do we pursue joyful, holy, good relationships? Does that sound good? Are you in? All right, I'm going to pray and then let's do it. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can come and we can worship you. We can actually come and be led by your scriptures, that you're actually a good God who has a good design for our lives, all of our lives. And so I pray tonight that actually your purposes behind the way that we date might come through really clearly. It might impact our hearts, it might impact our minds. Lord, we pray that coming out of this, we might have godly, joyful relationships with one another, but as we actually step into romantic relationships, may they be full of your goodness, where we honor you and honor the other person. Amen. So we're going to start tonight at the idol of relationship. And in some sense, I think we live in a culture which is actually addicted to the idea of dating and actually being in a relationship. And dating who you marry, obviously, it's a huge part of your life, if we're real. It's a massive decision that you'll make. Yet we just become consumed by it in such unhealthy ways at points. When we catch up with friends, it's all we can talk about. In fact, our identity can almost be hung on who we're talking to, who we're thinking about asking out, who we are actually dating. And we can feel actually really inadequate if we aren't dating anyone. Is something wrong with me? Am I not good enough? And so our main goal in life becomes, I want to find a partner. I want to be dating someone. I want to get married. We place our hope on it and we feel like we're genuinely missing out on it if we aren't dating someone. Our culture idolizes dating. It idolizes marriage. Yet there's so many problems with this. When we idolize marriage in church, ultimately, we dethrone Jesus of his power. To idolize marriage is actually to dethrone Jesus. Because it leads to this way of thinking, which says deep down, we believe that if you want to feel, experience this sense of companionship, if you want to actually feel loved, if you want to be comforted and complete, you need someone else to do that. You need the right partner. You need to be married. And so Jesus is good and grace is nice, but really deep down, we end up thinking, if only I could have a partner. If only I had someone to make me feel loved, to find comfort in, to complete me. And so what is offered by Jesus, we search for in someone else. And with this idolizing of marriage, it actually leads to looking at people of the opposite sex and asking ourselves this question. Is this person going to help me to live a fulfilled life? How is this person going to satisfy my needs? My desires, my need to feel loved. And you can see what might be happening here. Very quickly, we're objectifying people. We walk into a room, we even walk into church, but a party, a Bible study, anyone, we actually meet anywhere, we meet someone new, and we ask ourselves the question, are they the one? Could they be the one? Could they be the one to love me, to comfort me, to satisfy my needs and desires? Rather than valuing that person because they're a child of God, a brother and sister in Christ, we view people through the lens of how will they help me live a fulfilled life. Is this person the one? We objectify people and we actually ruin community and pull the power from the church. When we view people through the lens of what they can do for me, we're actually tearing our community apart. We pull the power from it. Our community exists to serve and love one another. But this is incompatible with asking ourselves the question, could this be the one over and over and over and over again? Our identity and our hope is found in Christ, first and foremost. You don't need to be married to be complete. No matter what our culture tells you, you are whole, you are loved, and you are beautifully and wonderfully made. And so as we'll see tonight, this could this person be the one attitude actually pulls us away from living the lives Christ has called us to. And I think actually sets us up on rocky foundations for any relationship that we then want to step into. The idol of relationship. Let's jump into singleness, because I think it's important that when we idolize marriage, we actually remove the gift from singleness. Come with me to Paul in 1 Corinthians 7:1. He says, "It is good for a man not to marry." And in verse 7, "I wish that all men were as I am." And "as I am" is referring to Paul being single. And Jesus was single as well. My life group had a really funny chat about this the other night, Keen in particular. We were talking about how good marriage is. We had this whole study on marriage, God's good design for it. And then we got right to the end of the study and we read out those two verses. And we sat there and we were like, what are we meant to do? Are you meant to get married? This whole study on how good it is. And then we read this and we go, why would I get married? Paul clearly says, don't get married. It seems like there's this massive contradiction actually going on. And for Paul, marriage is a gift. And for Paul, singleness is a gift. And the word for gift in Greek is the root word charisma, which means a passion, a drive to do something. But it also comes from the root word for grace. To marry is a gift of grace from God. And to remain single is a gift of grace from God. In a culture which idolizes marriage, Paul is actually beautifully leveling the playing field. He's saying, don't hold this higher than it ought. Don't hold this higher than it actually deserves. In Corinth, the people Paul's actually writing to here, family was everything. If you died single, it was believed that you were cursed by God. And in a sense, to die single was to die twice, because you were forgotten, you had no offspring, you had no legacy in family through children. And in fact, the Emperor Caesar Augustus made this law for widows, which is crazy, but the law was that they had to remarry within 2 years. It was that bad to be single. Yet into that culture that idolizes and actually enforces marriage, Paul says it is good to be single. He encourages it. To be married is a gift, and to be single is a gift. And to be single, to have the gift of singleness, doesn't mean that you don't want to be married. It doesn't mean that you don't desire to be married. But it means that you have this gift, you have this ability, you have this beautiful opportunity to serve God in a far greater capacity and in different and needed ways in which you couldn't if you were married. And that doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean we wrestle with the gift that we've been given in whatever stage of life we find ourselves in. But it does mean that whether we're married or whether we're single, we're actually called to live big lives for God's kingdom. I think Paul's saying that our focus isn't to be on whether or not we're in a relationship, whether or not we're married, but our focus should be on how we can use where we are in life, all of who we are, including our relationship status. How can we use all of that to actually love and serve others? And we'll be able to love and serve others in ways which is unique to us and which God has called us to, no matter what our relationship status is. Idolizing marriage takes the gift out of singleness. Yet there is great, great wisdom and a massive gift in being single. To marry is a gift, to be single is a gift, and we should use whatever gift we have to love God and love others. Idol of relationship, singleness. Should we jump into dating? Yes? Let's do it. You may be surprised to know that in the Bible, it doesn't actually talk about dating. It doesn't really mention it. There's no scriptures which speak directly of it. There's no advice that Paul gives to the churches to say, when you're dating, do this, don't do that. The Bible has very little to actually say on the matter, which means I'm making up everything from now on. No, I'm kidding. But the Bible, it was written dating actually began about 100 years ago. But the Bible was written thousands of years ago in a different language, into a different culture. And so if we were to follow the Bible, we'd actually be setting each other up in arranged marriages. I sometimes think that's not a bad idea. But all of that to say, this doesn't mean that there isn't great wisdom which we can gain from actually reading the scriptures and taking how it speaks about marriage, how it speaks about our sexuality, and having that inform how we go about dating. There's great wisdom in the scriptures when it comes to dating. We're first going to look at the idea of pre-dating. Where should my focus be before I'm in a relationship? And then we'll get into actually being in a relationship. So pre-dating, before we begin to think about asking someone out or jumping into a relationship, I think we need to ask ourselves the question, what is the purpose of dating? What is the purpose of dating? How we answer this question shapes the way that we then date. Often we might date for the sake of dating, or we date because that's just what you do. Maybe we date because deep down we have this sense of loneliness, and dating is this way to actually quench that loneliness that we feel. Maybe we date because we have a sexual desire we want satisfied and fulfilled. Maybe you date out of pride. Wrapped up in how you actually view yourself or how you think others view you is this need to be with someone, to be good enough, to be worthy enough, and so our ego drives our dating. But what is the purpose of dating? How would you answer that question? I think the purpose of dating is to discern, to see if you want to marry that person. The purpose of dating is either to move towards or to move away from marriage. Firstly, this means that if you want to date, I think you need to be ready to be married. I'm not saying that if you date someone, you need to marry that person. But if the purpose of dating is to move towards or away from marriage, then before we jump into dating, we should be able to say that marriage is something that you would like to pursue and journey towards. And therefore, I'm ready to begin that journey. I'm ready, in some sense, to be married. if you don't want to be married or you don't want to journey towards marriage, then what is the purpose of dating? Is it that loneliness or sexual desire or pride? Because these reasons are shaky foundations to build a relationship on. You answer that question, yes. You go down to the next box. Well done. I do want to move towards marriage. I'm ready to date. And the next question we need to ask ourselves then is, well, who? Who do I date? What should I be looking for in a potential partner? I want to explore two common camps almost of ways that we might answer that question. We're going to look at the settlers and the high bars. The settlers are the first ones. The settlers are when we are impatient, we're rushed, we're lonely, or just want to have sex. And there's this sense that of not waiting anymore. Maybe there's this fear of being alone and you tell yourself, is this the best I can do? If I don't date this person, there's no one else out there for me. I'll be alone. Or settlers might be driven by insecurity. Maybe your past is a lot. You don't believe you're good enough to date, good enough or deserve the person you dream of or know that would be right for you. This person you could date takes you as you are and that's enough for you. Maybe someone shows interest in you and makes you feel good about yourself. It makes you feel loved. You don't look into their character too much because it feels nice to be wanted and so you settle. Can you see the potential problems that might arise out of that though? Remember, you don't actually have to get married. Paul said it's good to be single. And when we settle, what's actually going on is that we're settling for less than what God may have had in store. We're settling out of fear, we're settling out of insecurity or pride and a sense of loneliness rather than dating someone out of love and a desire to marry them and pursue God with them and to love others with them. And I think deep down when we settle, we often know that there are some red flags. We know that the relationship might not be right. We explain it away though. We hope that that person might change. We hope that it'll be different once we get married. But people don't change. Or change that does happen takes years and years and years. Your partner though isn't your project. You want to marry a partner, not a project, because a project will not work out. We get these love goggles on and sometimes blind ourselves to things which should really make us ask, is this right? All of this actually is compounded if we have sex. If we have sex with our boyfriend or girlfriend, it becomes even harder to be aware of the red flags and where we may be settling in our relationships. The longer we stay in the relationship, the harder it is to actually break ourselves out of that settling mentality too. So we don't want to be settlers. The other common camp is the high bars. And this is where no one makes the cut. This is where we don't settle, but rather have a list of everything to look for in a partner. It's like going to order a kebab and ticking every box of sauces and sides. And Ben knows what I'm on about. This is where we have a list of everything that we look for in a partner. Dating, in a sense, becomes a bit like shopping. Who fits this really specific, in-depth profile that I've developed? Now, obviously, there's things that we should desire in a partner. But if we set the bar so high, we have a list which is impossible for anyone to fit into. And this will either end up in the person never getting married or in a marriage that is never good enough. Because your partner never fully meets your expectations or desires. Maybe there's fear of choosing the wrong person. Maybe there's unhealthy, unrealistic expectations which you've developed over time. Maybe you have a too high a view of yourself. But whoever you date, whoever you marry will always have quirks. There'll always be problems. There'll always be issues. There'll always be something which frustrates you and isn't exactly how you imagined it. But if you set the bar so high, we'll always live with that nagging sense deep down that maybe I could have done better. And if we keep this high bar attitude, we actually rob ourselves of the joy which is to be found in dating. Including the joy in that messiness and brokenness as two people come together and unconditionally love one another. So if we're not to settle and we don't want to set the bar too high, how do we go about looking for potential partners? And I reckon we need to look for a gardener. Zach Robbo. We need to look for Zach Robbo. We need to look for the image of a gardener. Now, why a gardener? Think about a gardener. What does a gardener do with their lives? They spend their days planting. They spend their days watering and weeding and cultivating the perfect environment. The perfect environment so that there's growth, so that there's flowers, so that fruit might actually grow. They toil the soil. They commit their lives to their garden, to the plants. You want your partner to be a gardener. What are they investing their life into? What are they passionate about? What are they cultivating? What fruit is actually coming from their life? How do they love Jesus and how do they love others? And how does that inspire you? How does that excite you, challenge you, and encourage you? How are they letting God actually build his kingdom through their life? What are they doing with their life well before you came along? What are they gardening? Remember, what is the purpose of dating? To either move towards or away from marriage. And what is the purpose of marriage? Well, it's partnering with another to actually love God and love others and to work for human flourishing. Marriage isn't the point of marriage. And so as we think about who we should date, we shouldn't just date someone because they're funny or they're good looking or they buy nice gifts or give us attention and say, it's okay, they're a Christian though. Is the person actually partnering with God to work for human flourishing? What are their dreams? Where do they spend their time and their money? What is the calling on their life? What are they gardening, planting, watering, and cultivating? In a potential partner, we should be attracted to their character, the integrity they actually show, the way they treat and speak about other people. We should be attracted to their generosity, their thoughtfulness, the way they intentionally love others. And at the end of the day, if you marry someone, you don't do everything with them, but you support them, you help them, you walk alongside, you champion, you challenge, you encourage them. And you want a partner who's going somewhere, who you're inspired by, who you can actually partner with to love God and love others. God calls us to live these big lives, big kingdom lives with our marriages, with all our relationships, to be outward focused, to love others in generous and hospitable ways. Find someone who wants to partner with you in that. Find a gardener. Don't settle and don't set the bar too high. Be attracted to what they are producing in their garden. And I think it's important to note that if we're to look for a gardener, we're to be a gardener with our lives too. We don't want to wait to find someone to then start being obedient to Jesus in our lives. We're to start now with the gift that it is to be single in that beautiful stage of life. How is your life a reflection of your dreams, passions, and purpose? How are you actually loving Jesus? How are you passionate about having God build his kingdom through your life? The challenge is for us to be gardeners ourselves, to live a life which is attractive to other gardeners. We can't expect of others that which we won't do ourselves. We won't end up dating a gardener if we aren't one ourselves. The time to actually start living out God's call on your life is now, whether you're single, dating, or married, but especially if you're single. Don't wait. Don't wait and think it will all change when you enter a relationship. Start gardening today. You're with me. It's good. You've found a gardener. You've asked them out. Well done. They said yes. You're now dating. Good. Dating, being boyfriend and girlfriend. We have so many different like titles for that nowadays, like exclusive or seeing each other. Let's just call it dating because that's what it is. There's a pet peeve of mine. But the question should now become, how do we're now dating, how do we together pursue holiness? How do we together pursue goodness and godliness with our relationship? How do we actually pursue discipleship together? And I think there's three areas which will keep us on a good path here and promote healthy relationships and holiness within them. The three are, there's no like good acronym or anything, I'm really sorry, it's not that memorable, you might have to write it down, but the three are, it's going somewhere, family and friends, and then the line. Let's start with it's going somewhere. Week one of this series, Andrew explored Song of Songs, and I want to jump into chapter 3 here, verses 6 and 7. It says this, "Who is this coming up from the wilderness, like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and incense, made from all the spices of the merchant? Look, it is Solomon's carriage escorted by 60 warriors, the noblest of Israel." The king is on the move. He's moving out of solitude. He's moving out of the desert. And where's he moving to? Well, verse 10 and 11 says, "It posts he made of silver, its base of gold, its seat was upholstered with purple, its interior inlaid with love. Daughters of Jerusalem, come out and look. You daughters of Zion, look on King Solomon wearing a crown, the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, the day his heart rejoiced." The king's on the move. He's coming out of the desert for what? For his bride, for the wedding. Throughout Song of Songs, there's this beautiful building and escalating actually towards the wedding day. And the same should be true of our relationships. We've established that dating is either moving towards or away from marriage. And it's important to note that sometimes the wisest decision that we could make, the healthiest decision, is to end a relationship. Just because we date someone doesn't mean that we have to marry them. And the way we should do this should always be full of grace and care, but there's great wisdom in being able to say that this relationship is moving away from marriage and to end it, and that's okay. And on the other side, there is great, great wisdom in choosing to continue to move a relationship towards marriage. One danger here is we feel like we have to know right away. We feel like we have to, even before we ask someone out, know if I want to marry that person. And that just creates unnecessary pressure and stress. Dating should be fun. Dating should be joyful with lots of dates and laughter and doing things that you both enjoy. There's this unnecessary pressure put on relationships when we make it all about marriage from a very early stage. If you talk about marriage on the first date, chances are you won't get a second one. But the thing about early stages of dating is that they are very important. The foundations we lay are the foundations that we potentially lay for life. And so I wouldn't recommend bringing it up too early, but it's important that in our hearts and in our minds, we actually know why we are dating someone. What is the purpose behind it? What are we actually pursuing? There's this great image for this in the book of Matthew. Jesus talks about building your house on a rock versus on the sand. The house is a metaphor of your life, but for a first century Jew, they would have understood the house as building their family. Building a house takes time, and so does building a life with someone else. The initial stage of your relationships, the foundation of your relationship, is vital for where your relationship will then head. In his teaching, Jesus says that if you hear the words and put them into practice, this is like a wise man, and the wise man built his house on the rock. Listening to Jesus, following him closely, and obeying his teaching is what will be the firm foundation of your relationship on which you can build a marriage. We want our relationships moving in that direction. The foundation of dating is to move towards marriage, so dig deep. Dig strong foundations which set you up for a healthy relationship. That was the first point. The second one is family and friends. In Song of Songs again, throughout the book we read of the friends. They pop up throughout the entire book. In chapter 1, verse 4, the friends say, "We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine." And verse 8, "If you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherds." It's poetic. It's actually a bit confusing to us, but the friends are actually affirming the relationship. The friends are speaking into the relationship. They have a voice and they have a responsibility. In Jewish culture, the way that dating worked was that the man would come to the woman's family and they would assess him on skill, they'd assess him on suitability and character. Is this man the right fit for their daughter? Nowadays, the man takes the woman away from her family and they actually date in relative isolation. And rather than skill and suitability and character, it's based on fun and romance and friendship. There's a balance to find here. But when we read Song of Songs, have a look at chapter 5, now verse 9. How is your beloved better than others, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you so charge us? The friends are actually calling her back to focus on what she loves in her husband. In the ups and the downs and the inner conflict, in the fear, in the doubts, the friends are there to speak truth into her life, to call her back to the good. And we need the same. We need to actually open our relationship up to our friends, to open it up to our family and mentors and people we trust and invite them to speak into them, to speak truth into it, to invite them to journey with you and not just to say what you want to hear. We cannot get to marriage by ourselves and we actually don't want a marriage where it's just us. To date well means to have a community around you. These people are there to challenge you, but encourage you, to call you back to one another. In the good and the bad, these people will help you make wise decisions when you may have your blinkers on. They help you make wise decisions when it might not even be clear what you should do. I have a couple of people in my life who play this role, and they know that it's their role. And they do speak truth into my life and relationships. And I hate it sometimes, but it's so good. But the biggest thing that I've learned through this is you have to listen to them. You have to actually be able to take on what they're saying and discern, is that right? Not just ignore them, not just brush it aside because it's not what you want to hear. Listen to the people, listen to your friends, listen to your family. They are wise beyond measure. They see things that you don't. And all too often we have that moment where they say, I told you so. And we could have avoided so much if we'd decided to listen more. So if you're dating, open your relationship up to trusted friends and family. And if you have a friend who's dating someone, maybe your role is to be the friend who speaks into their life. And I don't mean this in like an overreaching sense. I mean, it's one of the best ways that we can actually love one another. Rather than seeing a friend make a poor choice and be too scared to actually say anything, we should have the confidence that our role is to walk with them, to journey with them through whatever life entails. And dating is just one aspect of that. Family and friends are vital for a holy, godly, lifelong relationship. Finally, we come to the question of where is the line? And it's important to look at this as we think about how we pursue holiness and godliness in our relationships. Before we're married, what does our sexuality look like? We heard last week and the week before that God's design for sex is for it to happen in that covenantal bond of marriage. But how far can we go before the wedding day? Well, come with me to a story in Judges 13 where we meet Samson. We first meet his mum who has an angel actually come to her and promise her a child. Verse 2, Judges 13, it says this, a certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, you are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor because the boy is to be a Nazarite. Dedicated to God from the womb, he will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. That baby is Samson. and he has a calling on his life from before birth. And the calling is to be a Nazarite, which means that he is wholly dedicated to God, and that he'll actually lead the Israelites out of the hands of the Philistines. Being a Nazarite, though, means that there's three rules that he must live by. The first is that he's not allowed to cut his hair. The second is that he's not allowed to drink any wine. And the third is that he's not allowed to touch a dead body. The story continues, and in Judges 14, 1 to 2, Samson has grown up, and we read that Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I've seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." Which, side note, is a funny way to find a wife. Samson falls in love with a Philistine where he was an Israelite. Now, there's heaps of issues with that, but the main thing is that it's a long-distance relationship. And so he would walk to her, walk for days to actually see her. And on one trip, he was approached by a lion. Chapter 14, verse 5, Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his mother or father what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. He kills the lion. He liked the girl. How's this linked to the question of where is the lion? Well, that bit doesn't really, but it's a cool story. What is interesting, though, is what happens to that dead lion's carcass. Samson goes on to marry this unnamed girl. And when he went back to marry her, we read in verse 8 that sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at that same lion's carcass. And in it, he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they ate it too. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Remember that as a Nazarite, he wasn't allowed to touch a dead body. Here's a dead carcass. He can't touch that. But inside is beautiful honey. He can have some of that. So what's he do? He tiptoes up to the body. He leans over and he very, very carefully puts his hands together and dips them in to be sure right in the middle, avoiding to touch the sides, not going too deep to touch the bottom of the carcass. And he scoops the honey out. Does he touch the carcass? No. But if you keep reading the story of Samson, he comes to a sad end. And the point of this story is the story of the honey is to say that well before his sad demise, there were patterns in his life which set him up for disaster. Samson's heart is out of sync. And we have a little bit of Samson in us. We have this inclination to get as close to sin without sinning. We inch up to the carcass, we scoop some honey out, and then get on with life as though nothing happened. Where's the lion? I think if we're asking that question, we're actually trying to ask, how close can I get to sin without it being sin? If I don't touch the lion, can I eat the honey? And it's the wrong question to ask. How far can we go is the wrong question to ask. Rather, we should be asking ourselves, how holy can I make this relationship? How can I shape this relationship to be special and actually stand out from the crowd? How can I best love the person I am dating? How can we build a strong foundation which will set us up for a lifelong, joyful marriage? Song of Songs has some wisdom here too. In chapters 2, 6 to 7, it says, "His left arm is under my head and his right arm embraces me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the doves of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires." The Shulamite, the lady, she's engaged in foreplay. She's married by this point, but then she turns to her friends and she says, "Do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires." She's saying, don't wake up the sexual part of your relationship until you can follow it the whole way through. She's saying, don't go near the line. Carol shared this great image of this with me this week. Think of a waterfall, a really big waterfall. You're swimming in it right at the top, and the current is moving actually down towards the edge. The closer you get to the edge, the stronger the pull becomes. You start to swim away from it, but the pull is stronger and stronger. And the harder you swim, the less impact you make, because the closer you get to the edge, the stronger the pull is, until it pulls you over and you fall down into the bottom pool. And this is what it is like when we awaken the sexual part of our relationship. The more we do, the closer we swim to the edge, the harder it is to say no. The quicker we end up over the edge. Don't awaken love until it so desires. And practically, this is important too. When we engage in sex or anything really sexual in nature, early on in our relationship, it blurs our vision. Couples become blind to where the relationship isn't working, and what should have been a thing for a few months turns into a few years. And when it doesn't work out, there's just increased remorse and increased pain. Don't awaken love until it so desires. And you can't build a relationship on sex. At some point, you want more from the relationship. You want a friend, you want a partner, and at some point, a mother or father to your children. Someone to grow old with. Work on enjoying one another's company so that when the thrill of sex wears off, that love and joy is still there. You blind yourself to know if the person you are with is someone who you'll spend your life with when we bring sex into the equation. The purpose of dating is to either move toward or away from marriage. Everything that we then do to prepare to date, as we jump into dating, is to build a firm foundation of love. We want to be building that firm foundation of respect and trust between you and your partner, so that you may enjoy a joyful and lifelong marriage. That's dating. And it's important to look at all of that. But I also just want to say, we don't need to stress about it all too much. We hold on to these principles and we obediently try and follow them. But also go and have coffee with someone. Go and have fun. Find joy. Enjoy one another's company. Dating is a great thing, and we don't want to be burdened by this legalism. We want to find the freedom which Christ has in it for us. We do want to joyfully pursue the good which God has designed dating for. There's been heaps in that. There's been heaps in the other 2 weeks of that as well. And to conclude this series, we actually just wanted to have communion together. In a massive series, in a huge topic, there's so much covered and actually so much not covered. I actually want you to know, I don't know if you know this, but my job as a pastor is actually to journey with you guys through life. I'm actually paid to catch up with you, to read the Bible together, to sit with you as you figure out what it looks like to follow the way of Jesus in life, in all areas of life, but also in all the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. And so there's actually an open invitation to message me, but to message any of the pastors, to catch up and continue to talk about this stuff. We think it's really important, and we value actually you, and we want you to see it as important as well. Maybe it's not a pastor, but you should message a mentor. Maybe you need to catch up with a life group leader, a close friend. But let's actually use one another to encourage and walk together through all of this stuff. And as we hold all of that out, I think the place that we land is actually at the feet of Jesus, where we bring to him all of our sexuality, all of our experiences in love, sex, marriage, culture, dating, and we sit in the grace which he freely offers. We come before a loving God who cares so much for you, who loves you, who wants good for you, and who never gives up on you. So maybe we come to God tonight with a repentant heart, with a desire for life to be different, to actually be transformed. Maybe we come asking for forgiveness and a new start. Maybe we come and bring our guilt and shame and give it to Jesus. But you are free to come as you are to a loving God who accepts you just as you are. And so we're going to have communion now where we remember and reflect upon the body of Christ broken for us and the blood of Christ poured out for us. So as we come and eat and drink, I'd encourage you to reflect upon what God has been saying to you this series. What's God put on your heart over the past few weeks? How have you been encouraged and what has challenged your way of thinking? And then come to God as we are and thank Him for forgiveness and ask for His grace all over again. Let's eat the bread in our own time, but then save the cup and we'll drink together as a sign of our unity together. Let's come and eat and drink.